Hello.
Hi. It's great to see you all. It's really great to be here. I love it. Unfortunately, I have to start that there won't be enough time to sing together, unfortunately, which is why we're going to do it at the very beginning. I'm gonna start, so please follow me. The lyrics are fuck the AfD, scheiß AfD. You're gonna have to pick up the notes from the other people.
Dankeschön.
Thank you.
So. So, jetzt haben wir das geklärt, jetzt müssen wir nicht mehr über
We've done that. Now we can do other things. We're at the end of a very exhausting year. I feel extremely exhausted. I've had to think about what happened this year. It was actually this year that Trump got back to in government. Ukraine, Gaza. We had the parliamentary elections for the German Bundestag with the highest ranking results for the right-wing party in the history of the Republic. It's okay to be exhausted. The question is, what are we going to do in this stead? And it's important to also see the positive aspects sort of buried between all of this negative shit. And what's important to me is that talking about the election results. I'm happy that the left party is all here. I wish you good luck. Since the parliamentary elections, I watch this video every Sunday at 11 o'clock. It feels great. There's also another perspective on the results. And that is that looking at the entire population, we know that only 51% of the population have decided on the party fractions in the parliament. And there's a lot of struggle around majorities, and it's important that there is not this kind of one majority. There is multiple majorities, and that means we have a special responsibility to stand up for those who cannot be part of the electorate. And the most important and revolutionary act is saying the truth. And it's important to have information and transparency. And in 3 days, we will be celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Freedom of Information Act, the act that gives everybody the right to request information from the state, from the government. And it's interesting because this act actually was created from the parliament and not from the government, the governing parties. It came from the center of the floor, essentially, in parliament. And we can see here that we're talking about struggles that don't take just 1 year. In fact, it's more like 5 to 10 years. And we have this act now for 20 years, and the struggle continues. We need to keep struggling for justice and for democracy. And when we look at the landscape, the map of Freedom of Information Act, there are still two states that don't have any, which is Bavaria and Lower Saxony. And if you compare this to the international stage, you can see that there has been one change this year. Austria actually passed their Freedom of Information Act this year. That means that there are no Freedom of Information Acts in Belarus, Bavaria, and Lower Saxony. And the country that has a ruthless dictator, Bavaria and Lower Saxony. And at the same time, we can maybe see the idea of, or the potential of a Freedom of Information Act for Lower Saxony. We try to push this a little bit. We asked the responsible ministry and they said they don't want to meet us because they don't want to favorize civil society. So we have to find other ways of getting information. There is the Environmental Information Act, which is an act at the EU level. So everything that's sort of pertains to the environment, they have to give this information. And we have tried this a couple of years ago with regard to the COVID-19 pandemic. We argued at court that as COVID is transmitted over the air, the COVID decrees are part of environmental information, and obviously they would have to publish them. And the responsible court will have to make a decision on this, and this is going to be taking some time still. There was some preparation done by the project Befreite Dokumente, which is an online archive, and Frag den Staat is not just an archive, but a platform where you can make information requests under the Freedom of Information Act. And it's important to know that trust needs oversight, and we need to struggle here. We need to invest in this. We have brought more than 250 lawsuits. We have made more than 300,000 requests. We have collected documents and published them, documents on human rights violations and other things. And actually, some ministers have had to withdraw from their position because of our work. And you can really learn a lot about influence in this context, influence on political decision-making processes. And the most interesting document to me personally is this one, which is a lobby letter that Philipp Amthor, a young politician from the Conservative Party, sent to the Federal Ministry for the Economy. And he said that in the letter he disclosed his side jobs. And that actually kind of hurt his career. And at the same time, the Act can't really keep up with all the digital developments. We actually looked at the coalition agreement negotiations. We talked to people in these negotiations from both the Social Democrats and also the Conservatives and asked them to send us papers from these work groups. And we got the same papers from the same negotiators. There was a bit of a competition between them actually to leak documents to us. And I later talked to one of the responsible people, and he was very proud that one of his documents was leaked last. And not everybody liked this, especially the party leaders really didn't approve. And the best thing was seeing the working group paper on the reducing of bureaucracy. And there was this sentence in there that said they wanted to get rid of the Freedom of Information Act. We were quite shocked by this and sort of wanted to know who led this group, and it was Philipp Amthor, the aforementioned politician. He wanted to get his revenge on the Freedom of Information Act. And then a lot of questions were asked whether our association was going to be done. But in the end, Philipp Amthor was actually sort of on the defensive position, and he then said to a newspaper that it was all fairy tales, that anybody wanted to restrict information rights under the Information Act, Freedom of Information Act. And then he even got supported by one of the national German rappers. And then he said that, well, I'm just going to do it like this, but next time it's going to be more expensive.
The Bild, as Bild reported, this male friendship was over, and I'm wondering if this really was a mutual friendship, if one side has to pay the other in order for them to spend time together. But moving on from the Bild, it escalated to gutefrage.net, a German portal. And then, you know, next week it's at Markus Lanz, a German talk show. And the first 50 minutes in his show, he only interviewed Philipp Amthor on the Freedom of Information Act, and that looked like this. I don't have anything against the state, and I don't have... We have to hear again. I don't have anything against Frag den Staat, and I don't have anything against freedom of information request as such. Well, as such, that was an interesting headline, and that was not one of the taglines I didn't I expected for this year. And now we're using this as a testimonial for Frag den Staat. The criticism somehow persisted, and then the Anstalt did the following. This is all heavily improvised, it's a pun. Give me a single relevant uncovering by Frag den Staat. Well, the plagiarism affair, letters by Giffey, human rights violation by Frontex, glyphosate scandals that is being covered up, other interior scandals, including well, but other than that, nothing. Furthermore, the Minister of the Interior in Bavaria is completely right when he says, I'm not under the influence that the average citizen wants to go through files. It would rather overwhelm them. I could give it to them, the files, and then the average citizen, they wouldn't know what to do with it. There was a petition with 400,000 signatures, and at some point Philipp Amthor realized that he couldn't stop it. He went to the Bild newspapers and suggested to merge the Freedom of Information Act with...
Two more weeks of such a campaign and he would have asked for to make an internship with us. Well, actually, in the coalition agreement, it says that the FIA should be improved. So we defended it. So this was stopped. If you want to get a tattoo, we now have an idea for that. I could give it to you, or a stencil. Now, there is a draft for a transparency law written by the Ministry of the Interior under Councillor Kuhl, but in the end the ministry itself blocked it. Well, it has to come from the parliament because different people in the ministry blocked it. We wanted to have the draft, they didn't want to give it us, so we had to sue them to get the draft for a transparency law into the public. So we won, and now we have a very interesting Word document because there is lots of comments in it. In the original draft, it said, for example, that oversight of whatever the state is doing should be improved. The oversight is done by the parliament and by the judiciary, not by the public. And, well, where are we going to if the public has the opportunity to oversee what the state is doing? So we have to fight for public oversight. Before, we published a database of lobbyists where you can see how millions of euros are being spent. We discussed a lot about this and get many departments to give us files they have, but also information on their official smartphones. However, they are of the opinion that they do not need to give us this information. We currently have a lawsuit with the Foreign Office. They say they have an internal rule that SMS may not be sent, so we don't have any. But we say, well, there is this article that SMS exists. And however, in the end, it turned out that they have not SMS messages, but they have drafts of the messages, and they were given to us. So, yeah. If you work to militarization, we have a lot of interesting questions. in many states where the army is going to schools. If you work with climate change, we now have the climate help desk with Freiklinstadt. If you need support, we are glad to support you. If you work to fascization of the society, we also have something for you. In this year, we had a very interesting press conference of the Ministry of the Interior, where he presented the report of the Federal Office for Protection of the Constitution. And he showed us two graphics, first right-wing extremism, then left-wing extremism. And it's very interesting, if you look to the scala at the left, according to the Federal Office, the number of violent left-wing extremists was as high as before. But the minister said the following, now we have 38 individuals. Last year we had 27,000 right-wing extremists, and the number of violent left-wing extremists has increased sharply to 11,200. After I watched the press conference, the number was 11,201. So there was some rise. But the interesting opportunities with the FOA, you can ask for the preparation sheets of the minister for the press conference. So the core messengers of the Ministry of the Interior says the biggest danger for democracy comes from the far right. But Dobrindt did not say it. He did not say this sentence. This man has an agenda, and that's what we saw. If you work to the question, with the question how money is being spent and money should be brought in. Last year we found an interesting hut in the Sachsenwald forest. There was a tax haven where approximately 24 companies had their official seat, but clearly they didn't really operate from there. So within 3 days, this tax haven was shut due to our research. So we thought, well, we have even more company tax havens in Germany. So together with ZDInfo, we published a database of corporate tax havens with all the companies operating there. This, for example, is the seat of a number of companies in Saxony-Anhalt. Their windows don't even have glass. The issue is that in this town, the corporate taxes are a lot lower than around them, so they have their official seat there while not operating from there. We have a number of companies belonging to Deutsche Bank in a small house belonging to the fire department of Sessen, a small town. So now it's publicly available for the first time all over Germany, this database. It's about 1 billion euros of loss to the state due to this. And now tax authorities can also use the database to take a look into who has their official seat there but works from our town, actually.
Maybe this is quite interesting as well. We're talking about 1 billion euros. This research costs us about 50,000, mostly for people working at our association and funded by all of your donations. As a small token of thank you, we programmed a little game for you. We don't have a newspaper this year, we have a little game. Just go to fragdenstadt.de/spiel, S-P-I-E-L. Have some fun with that. As an actor of civil society, we have different and generally less financial means than other big players. Because if you look at the big family-owned companies in Germany who have more than 50 million euros of yearly revenues, and all of these companies are doing very successful lobby work, for example, with the Minister of Economic Affairs, Katharina Reiche, and the demands are quite clear: get rid of the Supply Chain Act, prevent wealth tax, keep loopholes for inheritance tax, and also get rid of the expatriation tax. The Supply Chain Act has been suffering. It is supposed to keep human rights standards throughout the entire supply chain, but Katharina Reich said that only severe violations of human rights should be persecuted. Simple human rights violations are okay, just a little child labor, but just not too much. This is quite probably a breach of the German constitution. And they actually manage, these lobbyists manage by talking directly to the people in the ministries to push their agenda. We have various documents that we requested and published, and you can see that, for example, there is a foundation for the family-owned companies whose representatives met with the Minister for Family Affairs to get rid of the expatriation tax, because people who are rich and leave the country have to pay a certain tax, and so that they can just move all of their wealth to some kind of island in the Caribbean. And they said, well, maybe we could get in touch with the conservative faction in the parliament, and then we as the ministry are going to actually get on with it. So she essentially gave them advice for their lobbying work as a minister. And it doesn't mean that the lobbyists have to sort of work on the ministry. It's essentially the same kind of people. If you look at how they write emails to each other, it's very informal, congratulating them to on various achievements and sending very warm regards and wishes to meet again soon. You can see that how close these people are. For example, this was some kind of AI summit in Tyrol, and this was organized by Sebastian Kurz, the ex-chancellor of Austria, who now has offices in Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Tel Aviv, and Vienna. He has a new startup, a new IT startup, together with the founder of NSO, the Israeli IT company that developed, among other things, Pegasus, the spyware. And he organized this Moving Mount Ains together with Theodor Karl zu Gutenberg, the former Minister of Economic Affairs, who is also now the partner of Katharina Reiche. We don't exactly know who was present at the meeting, and Katharina Reiche is trying to prevent any information from getting out. We made a request, and the response was that this was not an official occasion. So it was a private occasion. And what we say is that the political is private. And the question is, who decides which kind of occasion, what kind of journey is actually private or public, or as part of their official position? There is no official rules on this. There is nobody who governs this question. And according to the Spiegel newspaper, she was actually, Katharina Reiche was actually introduced as the Minister of Economic Affairs. Now, Katharina Reiche says that we need to work more in Germany. And honestly, this is a big risk of corruption. It's extremely unclear with whom Katharina Reiche talked there, what kind of decisions are made and how they're made, how drafts are maybe written at these kinds of meetings. And we also looked a bit at the press coverage of this. Apparently, there was also a Greek minister who went there as an official, and there also was an official from Austria there. So in Austria, as we know, there is now a Freedom of Information Act. Great. So we use that. And the Austrian official also says that this was a private occasion, but at least one of his employees actually prepared this. So there's some kind of documents, and we found this URL. It has some password protection. We tried some passwords, but they didn't work. And then we remembered, well, Katharina Reich, maybe we need to work a bit more on this. Or that's what she said, actually. And there's also this other URL with an API. And of course, you can get all kinds of content via this API. That happens when you have your API configured by ChatGPT.
And this way, at least you can see a little bit what went on. And we were able to release a bit of information about it to the public. If you still want to register, you still can do that. But anyway, it's still unclear who paid for the whole thing. I looked up what a night at this hotel costs. A few days ago, it was 1.312 euros. And it's unclear to this day who paid for it, who was there, what was decided. And I would say if it sounds like corruption, looks like corruption, and then it was at the Moving Mountains. Well, I can only say it was in the Alps. Sebastian Kurz organized it, so there was a lot of snow. I'm unclear if it snowed outside. And these are the Moving Mountains. But with this whole talk about reduction of bureaucracy, it's clear we need some bureaucracy, we need some control. If you want to help, we are looking for employees for software developers. But the question is, how do we deal with governmental control, especially in a time where everyone is talking about reduction of bureaucracy? The cancellation of the Freedom of Information Act was about reduction of bureaucracy. The supply chain changes were about reduction of bureaucracy. But we're not really seeing a reduction of bureaucracy. We're more seeing a change in bureaucracy. So, for example, we have this payment card that is being introduced. This is a lot of bureaucracy, but the question is who is subject to the bureaucracy and who isn't. So we're not really dealing with reduction of bureaucracy. But we're dealing with a change of bureaucracy, and that has to, the way this happens has to change. Because we see that the how the state acts is harder and harder to control. So the Ministry of the Defense has to write less and less reports to the parliament under this notion of reduction of bureaucracy, but essentially we know less and less what millions of euros are being spent for. And we know where this leads, because we can see in the US how under this pretense of reduction of bureaucracy, state structures are being destroyed. This led to allegedly 100,000 people dying. And we have to be very certain and specific about who talks about this reduction of bureaucracy, because we also see that the head of the telecom is in favor of it, and we shouldn't suffer the illusion that German tech companies are different from the ones in Silicon Valley. Actually, I think the ideology is mostly the same. Then reduction of bureaucracy, it's also being used by anti-democratic parties such as AfD politicians who went to New York recently to support the Republicans in the US. They did that to talk about reduction of bureaucracy. And if we now add AI to it, we result in the German variant of Doge, and that's what he wants. If anything is standardized mathematics, then old age insurance. You can probably, the German old age insurance, you can replace it with 600 people and AI. Don't you want your old pension to be paid by 600 people and AI? That is what we're talking about if these people are talking about AI and reduction of bureaucracy. We're talking about people like Jens Spahn and the attempts to destroy public structures. But we still have the biggest database of what Jens Spahn is calling for in the world. My favorite was this one that he was asking for support from the left to combat the AfD. But Jens Spahn was mostly challenged this year because there were several problems that he had. It's still unclear how he financed this 4.1 million euro villa in during the pandemic. He may have had dealings with a billionaire, but it's unclear. And there were many dealings about him this year because there was a special report on him from the Ministry of Health. We published this report, and it concerned itself with how the 3.1 billion euro that were wasted by him about mask deals came to pass. We published it, but at first it looked like this. This was a huge problem, but we couldn't get it any other way at first because this also played into the hands of his defense strategy. And he said this, more or less. So at some point we received the uncensored version of the report and published it. It's very interesting. I recommend you read it, especially the first couple of paragraphs, because the special reporter is talking about how the 3.1 million euro was spent and how Jens Spahn did it. And they come to the conclusion that he's handling, acting in his own interest. Against the advisement of his employees. And nevertheless, he acted on this task of acquisition, despite lacking economic understanding, is what it reads. He first acquired masks despite not knowing how to, then gave the contract to people he was acquainted with. And the problem we now have is that many of this can't be uncovered now because the documents are missing. The special reporter writes, we still have to conclude that coming to conclusions was supported by Frag den Staat because they could actually not find the necessary files themselves. From within the Ministry of Health.
People talking all the time about reduction of bureaucracy. What we need is, well, maybe more bureaucracy. The Ministry of the Health was in a phase during the pandemic where they outsourced the creation of files to private companies. So the most official thing you could do was done by some private corporation because the ministry was unable to. And then it says, well, the in-house experts of the ministry tried to tell him that they couldn't get the masks buying into the ministry but keeping with the other authorities. But the minister himself used his contacts, and for that he used his MDB account with the parliament. So why with the parliament? Because emails sent by the minister from the minister's account have to be published according to the Freedom of Information Act. But MPs have a free mandate, and their emails cannot be accessed with the FOIA. So if a minister is using his MP account for ministerial stuff, you now know why. So now let's take a look in his emails. That's his ad, that's his normal email address. Then you have staff emails, then a bit secret, a personal account from himself. If you take a look which address he actually used, then it was this one. So his Jens Spahn staff member 7@bundestag.de. This email address is worth 3.1 billion euros. If it sounds like corruption, if it looks like corruption, it was probably staff member number 7. But Jens Spahn, he had zero consequences for this until today. He just continues in his career. He is demanding things all the time. And this has to be seen in the context of many political developments right now. There's huge discussion right now whether people should be deported even to Syria. And the only remaining upright Christian Democrats said you can't deport to Syria. It looks like Germany after the Second World War. You cannot send anyone there. You kind of lose empathy. Jens Spahn says, I think it's a patriotic obligation to rebuild your homeland that you helped there. This man who wasted 3.1 billions of euros and never had any consequence for that is now telling others what their patriotic duty is supposed to be and telling them to go back to their devastated country. I have absolutely no understanding left for this, but only despise. A week ago, there was the first deportation to Syria since 2011. I think this chapter isn't closed yet. We also have deportations to Afghanistan now. The Ministry of the Interior, who says all the time that you should fight Islamism, is now working together with the Taliban to be able to deport people. All of that is happening under the disguise that they only want to deport criminals. But it's pretty clear that afterwards everybody else might face this as well. So I think everything we can do against those deportations, we have to do. Because these deportations are a huge stone in the dehumanization of entire population groups. So what I'm doing is attacking this narrative. There is this idea all of these people committed serious crimes, but we don't know that for sure. It's only statements they're given. So we sued the state of Berlin. They now have to tell us which crimes the people Berlin deported to Afghanistan committed. So let's see what they will give us. We don't have it yet. And that's at least something we can put in their way as a possibility to break the narrative, to create counterpower, because transparency for itself is not enough. We need a civil society counterpower. We have to look for consequences. Considering a situation where migration policy is a just a start for authoritarian change overall, we have pushbacks at German borders, which are obviously illegal. Partially, they go back to this guy. He's not well known. It's Daniel Thiem. It's a professor of public law at the University of Konstanz. And he's the guy who's always invited into Bundestag by the Conservative Party. And he's a so-called expert. He doesn't say, oh, well, it's very different behind the walls. But he says, I, as an expert, I think this and that. And half a year ago, he said that we have to apply human rights less strictly, and exactly that's what's done now. He said only young men between 16 and 39 should be pushed back, so even minors, and then maybe the courts would play with that. So he didn't say we should change the law, but he said we should break the law and then the courts will comply with the public pressure. And that's an authoritarian way to make politics, which has nothing to do with democracy. The Spiegel, a big newspaper, said, well, that violates international law. And he said, well, yeah, we need to apply human rights less strictly. Spiegel said, yeah, that might create cruel pictures. And he said, yeah, well, the fear of such pictures shouldn't put us off front. And then there's the question, what to do with this guy? And I have an idea. Now, anyone would say, oh, Arne, can you really do that? Can you let people drown? And I think we need to less strictly apply human rights. You could just let young law professors between 46 and 69 years disappear. And then some people may ask, should we do this with all political opponents? No, no, just with young law professors.
And then maybe there's a question, doesn't that do something with us? Don't those pictures change us? And I think the fear of those pictures shouldn't stop us. But I'm sensing there's shared feedback on this. I was aware of this beforehand, I as an expert, but Actually, we have a situation where at the German border every day the law is being broken and people are not allowed in. Although this is illegal, these rejections are proceeding, and so we sued the Ministry of the Interior this year. That's now with the prosecution. They sent it to Potsdam. Now it's back in Berlin. We are opening a new sub-organization. The slide reads Punish the State. But I think it's important that not only did we sue him, but we also created a template on how to not follow the directions for federal police officers that they're being given. And I think that's important because in this time, the resources to resistance, it's important that we strengthen them everywhere. We used to have an email thread from the Berlin Foreign Office where we had an explicit direction like this, where someone explicitly said that they would not follow these orders that they're given regarding rejecting people. And I think we should publish information like this. And we need this more and more because times are getting hotter. And there was a really strange news in the last month that the federal office, the Office for the Protection of the Constitution in Hamburg, persecuted someone on the left because he said that the Office for the Protection of the Constitution, they were criticized, among other things, because of undercover agents, and so they came after this person. And now you've been wondering, well, the Office of the Protection of the Constitution was in the news because of undercover agents and cover-ups. So that's what they... they were in the social media for that, and the protection of right-wing networks. And it's important to repeat that. So what's the foundation for any sort of resistance? With the Federal Society for Civil Rights, if you're being sued for critical statements, if you need advice regarding democracies, we have a network of lawyers, and we will finance the dealings for you and offer you legal protection. So please feel free to approach us. And it starts with those who organize knowledge. So if we look at how Trump's government acted, one of the first measures they took is acting against libraries. It's important to get information to the public. We have a project called Frag den Staat Library. We got several complaints for intellectual property rights violations, but I don't think anything will happen. We're in a time where we can't really just stand on trying to get large parties to act against, to institute a firewall against right-wing parties or trust parties that have betrayed us several times and wait for them to switch. But rather, we are in a time where we ourselves have to be self-confident and without a compromise and act for the claims of the civil society. Because posing these claims, yeah, well, we've done for several times, 2014, 2016, and the list goes on. They all wanted to counter the AfD in terms of contents. But if we look at this request, for example, right, it's really interesting to historically contextualize them, because the age that you could be prosecuted for, it changed over time, right? So if you ask for people to be able to prosecute it at age starting at 12, you have to contextualize that. And now we have to ask a question, who wants this?
And you really need to listen to what these people are saying and stop hoping that they actually want nice democratic things. And they are actually saying what they mean. And this leads to
these kind of ideas. You're not old enough for social media, but you're old enough to go to prison. And this is the view on humanity, on humankind, that is behind all of these ideas, the ideology behind all of it. And it's important to deal with these ideas. And this means that we actually have to have the AfD banned in Karlsruhe by the Constitutional Court. In the past year, I published a book on taking power. It starts with a scenario of an authoritarian shift, an authoritarian turn with a federal government with the majority of the AfD, the far-right party. And the scenario contains the idea that they will use the concept of neutrality to restrict and repress civil society. This is also applies to requests in parliament, and this actually happened this year. And it wasn't the AfD, but it was the Conservatives. In February, there was this request with the famous 551 questions. This is what it looked like, where the Conservatives tried to sort of with a conspiratory subtext say that all kinds of associations were doing anti-democratic things. For example, the association where the Grandmas against the far right, there was a question whether the federal government thinks that they actually influenced election results and political decisions. And we need to understand that they are serious about this. There's a lot of pressure on civil society organizations, and this is only going to increase in the coming years. And the federal education minister has written that the program of Living Democracy, Demokratie Leben, there are going to be serious cuts. And we need to think about building alternative structures. Katrin Prien, the minister, isn't going to do anything here. She said that when the AfD comes into power, she would just leave. And this is the Musk move. You just make life here as unbearable as possible, and then you just go off to Mars. And we can't use this for anything. We need to see how we can build counterpower as part of civil society. And there are so many great organizations. It is so great to be a part of this network. This is just a brief excerpt. There's all these great things that you do here at Congress or out there. We could also have several talks just talking about that. And this gives me a lot of courage. And we need to think about how, with all the pressure that's coming up, how we can support each other even better. We kind of started this year with the Überbrückungsfonds, which is a fund that helps organizations that usually receive state funding but haven't received it yet. This is a huge problem for many democratic initiatives, because at the end of the year there's going to be a shortage of funds usually, and we gave them credits without interest, and they will pay us back when they actually do receive the government funding. And I think this is just the beginning. There are several other beginnings. We can see several structures that try to build solidarity, that go out, support other organizations. And the potential for counterpower is enormous. In the summer of migration 2015, 9 million people in Germany were active. We didn't see all of them, but they were all there. And also in the climate movement, we have made enormous strides. We had a lot of protests this year, last year. The potential is absolutely there. And at the same time, we see in all of our work and with all the news, there are all these steps back. And we know this from our work with the Freiheitsfonds,
where we work for riding without a ticket, a public transport without a ticket gets decriminalized. So in the past 4 years, we got 1,042 people out of prison.
Und jetzt vor einer Woche noch mal ein Fall.
A week ago there was a case. A mother dying in the hospice wanted to see her son a last time, who was imprisoned for riding without a ticket. So we bought him free. We paid the fine for him he couldn't pay, so she could get her last wish granted. And at the same time, with all this work, we see how frustrating it is, because it's so obvious that you just would need to change this law to get decriminalization. Last year, we already had a law drafted for decriminalization, but the former coalition in Germany didn't manage to vote on it before it broke together. They managed to strengthen asylum law, but this wasn't important for them enough. Now we have a social democrat conservative coalition who is not fighting for this. Now we have a draft for reform. Yeah. So we don't give this up. We're going to the towns now. In all town, city, we want to have the local parliaments demand from the traffic associations to not file criminal complaints against people who rode transport without a ticket. Frankfurt is the most recent municipality where they decided to not report anyone to the police anymore for riding without a ticket. So I'm so desperate as an activist. I spoke with a person who was in prison by herself, because she couldn't afford a ticket, she was in prison. So now she's an activist herself, and I told her how frustrating I think that. She said, well, 2 years and then we'll have it decriminalized. And I have said, well, who am I to say that this won't happen if she says that it happens?
And I
think that here at the Congress, we have such a beautiful place where I can learn so much every time about how people can hold together, how care work holds all of this together. There may be one person on the stage, but thousands for the structures, thousands making all of this possible. So thanks a lot for all the angels who are here. Care work starts with saying, I care. That's important for me. And here you can notice this, how important we are for each other and how important gifting is. It can be donating money, but also giving time or attention. We give or gift so much attention to people doing important things, and I think we need even more of that. So what we can take from Congress, that's being thankful, being together instead of concurrence, that's solidarity, gratitude. What's important of working together is how we can bring this back to our communities, how we can get at least some parts of those beautiful elements of Congress at home. So asking ourselves, well, if a lot of is coming at us, who do I want to be in crisis? Where do I want to be in crisis? And with whom do I want to be in crisis? So making rooms where you can gain new strength from here. And considering a year which is going to be very, very tough next year, lots of state elections in Germany, but what all the things we see from each other, what we learn from each other, we can become wanting change. If we want change, that starts with saying what is, but it doesn't stop there. It continues into organization. And with all the suffering we can see in the world, we also have to note, no matter where, everywhere, there is resistance. And hope, and I believe, is not the certainty that we will win, but the certainty that we are doing the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you.